When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
All right, here we are once again, your favorite rock and roll podcast. That's us, the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my motliest friend, Chris Sinzak.
How's it going, man?
It's going good. How are you doing?
Good. Having a bit of a rough week, but always happy to jump on a mic with you, and we have a special guest today, and that makes things always better.
Yes, because it's getting to be the season of giving thanks. That's right, it's Thanksgiving time once again, and we used to do a long time ago, some of you might remember this, every year on Thanksgiving, we would have our Canadian brothers come in and take over for us for a week. So in the name of tradition, we brought a true Canadian hero on the show with us today, and you're going to find out all about it in just a minute, because, of course, we got to take care of our business, and our business is good. It's podcast reviews, recommendations, whatever. We'll take them. We need them. We love them, and we've got one right here today. It's an Apple Podcast review. It's entitled Five Thumbs Up Again, and it's got all five stars. And it goes like this. This is my second review, 4 years later, five stars again. Your show has improved. Nothing more I can say. Love it. Your big, big fan, Andy G from Toronto. That's right. Paying some love to Canada. We might as well get it going right off the start. Andy G, awesome review, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, man. A good taste up there in Toronto.
Oh, you know it.
I always wanted to go to Toronto once and check that city out.
Definitely. Someday. Maybe we'll do a rockin' pod up in Toronto someday. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I could go for that.
Shoot, yeah. So that's very cool. If you guys want to leave us a review or a recommendation, we like to get them on Podchaser. We like the Facebook recommendations. We really like the Apple Podcast reviews, just like Andy G right there did. And you can do it too. And if it's awesome, well, you know what? We're going to read it on the show. You're going to hear your name, where you're going to hear us talking about how awesome you are for doing it. And it's just as simple as that. Help your buddies out. We appreciate it. Another good way you can help out the show: every single week, we come out with a new episode. And when we do, we always make the announcement on one or two places, either our Facebook page or our Twitter account. And if you see either one of those, all you got to do is share it and retweet it, and you can become an honorary Geek of the Week, just like these fine people.
Yeah, Geeks of the Week this week are Adam Cox, Robert Rowe, Rob Webb, Joseph Capone, Joe Costa, Kristen Schimbeck, Sean Cullen, John Phillips, Byron Nemeth, Samuel Wetz, Darren Parkin, Grayson Gallegos, Christopher Stokes, Wayne Cross, James West, Scott Kraft, Ben with Joe, Mike Parnell, The Bakery Podcast, Aaron Baker, Keith Rockford, Paul Korn, Simon Catt, Craig Turtich, Pantheon Podcast, Mikhail Burrell, Eric Lusier, Warren Edward LaRue Baker, David Glenn, Doug Fox, Bill Elam, Bipolar Billy, JJP, Body of the Soul, Hakon Bergstad, Eladio, Vet Halen, John McGaffick, Ernesto Aguiar, Stickman, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. That's right, man. Our people right there, Geeks of the Week. Hey, we had a fun time last week. We just busted out the new noise. These people dug it. They shared it. They retweeted it and had a good time, and they are Geeks of the Week. We love them for it. Last week was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun when you can talk about a brand new AC/DC record, right?
Exactly. Man, still loving that. I've been jamming on it this whole past week again. It's so good.
Yeah.
I was at the record store the other day. I ran into Ryan Cook on the way in. We were going into Phonolux, and we get in there, and what's everybody talking about? The new AC/DC album and how awesome it is. It was very cool.
That's awesome. Universal praise.
Definitely worth it. Good to see something good happening in 2020.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, we've always got something good and fun going on around here. And when you want to have some fun and, like I said, talk about going way back in Decibel Geek history, If you know it, you know what we're talking about. We used to have Wally and Rich on every single Thanksgiving for us. They'd give us the week off so we could enjoy with our families, and we'd celebrate Canadian Thanksgiving. And they had different guests on with them. And basically, if you listen to the CGCM podcast, it was them doing that before there even was such a thing back then. And so to help us give thanks this week to some of our favorite rock and roll from one of our favorite bands, our main man, the Baby Gator himself, Wally Norton. What's up, brother?
Doing good, guys. Doing good. It's been a while. Happy Thanksgiving to all of your listeners out there.
Right on. Same to you.
Although you've already had your Thanksgiving, haven't you?
Yeah, Canadian Thanksgiving is like the third week of October. We're about a month ahead of you there.
So what is the difference between Canadian Thanksgiving and an American Thanksgiving? What's the main difference?
You know what? We never did a Black Friday until probably the last decade or so. But other than that, I have honestly no history behind it, no idea why ours is earlier. They never really taught us that in the public education system. I just know we celebrate in the same way, a day off. But ours is always on a Monday, so we get the official long weekend. And we eat turkey and same thing.
Nice.
Okay. I honestly don't remember any formal education on that.
That's wild. So I'm sure there's a story. Kind of like American Thanksgiving. They teach you all about it, but then you grow up and find out it was all bullshit. at least in Canada, they don't waste your time at all.
Exactly. We just get right to the turkey.
Nice. I like it.
Well, before we get into this, there may be some Decibel Geek listeners, I can't imagine who, that doesn't know about the CGCM podcast. Can you give a little summation about what they can expect if they listen?
Well, it is basically, an offshoot of the Decibel Geek podcast. You invited me to become a Decibel Geek writer back in 2012, which I had a blast doing that. And I introduced my co-host Rich to you guys, and he worked behind the scenes for many years at Decibel Geek as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, once we started doing the once a year co-hosting your show and having a lot of fun with it, people started saying we should, launch out our own, and we dodged it for a while and finally put together CGCM podcast. And in, a true salute to you guys who helped us out. That's why we have geeks in our title.
Well, the biggest difference is you guys are a lot meaner to each other than Aaron and I are to each other.
No. I'm very nice to my co-host ass face.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how many times I've heard the word fuck face come out of Rich's mouth.
All in good fun.
Nice.
Oh, man.
How is Rich doing these days?
He's doing great. Yeah, it's a weird world. We've been locked down, not locked down, locked down, and we're going right back into another one. So it's always crazy. But so we have to socially distance and record remotely a lot more, which sucks because it's much better to do it with a couple pitchers of beer.
Right. Yeah. We're going through the same exact thing. Chris and I haven't been in the same room together since, man, I don't know, probably the first month in 2020.
I think
really
sometime in February, maybe, was the last time we saw each other.
Yep, it sucks. I hate Skype. I love it, but I hate it. I love it because you can do this if you have to, but I hate it because it's never the same as sitting in the room with the person you're talking to.
Exactly.
All right, so I just figured today, since we had the three of us together after so long, it's so good to get back together with Wally. Something the three of us all have in common is our love, respect, and adoration of the band Motley Crue. And Motley Crue's given us a lot of studio albums over the years. And I thought, how fun would it be to sit down with Wally and Chris and myself and go through every single Motley Crue album and try to figure out what is the best song on each one?
Was it the best or our favorite?
Well, the best to you, our favorites, okay. Because, who can say who's really the best? Yeah. The three of us will disagree. People listening to the show will definitely disagree and sometimes agree. So we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how many matches we get here.
I'm willing to bet there will be a few.
Yeah.
So for me, I can tell you that I got into Motley Crue probably the same way as Chris, being that we're pretty close to the same age. And that would have been seeing the Smoking in the Boys Room video on MTV. And seeing it and going, wow, that's cool. It reminded me kind of a Kiss. And so I wanted to check out Motley Crue. And I got the Theater of Pain album for Christmas that year from my cousin Rhonda. And it was, yeah, I loved it. And then from there, they were a band that when Girls, Girls, Girls came out after that, I got it. And then I went back and got Shout at the Devil and the debut album. And so I was all in on Motley Crue. Still to this day, love Motley Crue. And so it'll be fun to go through all this. How'd you guys get into the Crue?
Similar to you, it was when Smoking in the Boys Room was out on MTV. And I remember I had a friend at school that had the cassette tape of it. And he was a fan going back to the first album. And I remember mentioning it to him that I'd saw the video. I was like, that's a really cool song. And of course, being a dumb kid, you don't realize it's a cover song. I thought right. It was original. And I was just like, oh, I want to hear the rest of that record. And he's like, well, I'll come in. I'll bring it to you tomorrow because I think it sucks. And he gave it to me. And because he was not a fan of it compared to the first two records.
Right.
And gave it to me. And I still have a soft spot in my heart for that album because it was my first Motley Crue record.
Okay, I'm already worried about this whole conversation starting this way, but I had not realized that you guys jumped in on Theater of Pain, and this is a long-going topic of conversation on CGCM.
Oh, I know.
The Meister's adoration for Theater of Pain, because he also jumped on to the Crue chain at that time. Now, I got into Crue a little bit earlier. I must have seen... It was Def Leppard and Quiet Riot that indoctrinated me into a world of hard rock and heavy metal. Kiss, I was introduced to by my older cousin. But they were always the image and the trading cards more so than the music. And it wasn't until Def Leppard Pyromania came out that, you know, I suddenly opened my eyes to hard rock. Right. And Motley Crue soon followed. So I'm pretty sure it was a show called Friday Night Videos. I think this predated MTV. We would watch it every Friday night, and they'd always play the newest videos, and saw the video for Looks That Kill, and immediately went out to buy Shout at the Devil. So I was in there a little bit earlier than you guys, and Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil tour, June 10th, 1984, was my first concert.
Nice.
Lucky. Yeah, Motley Crue and Accept.
Oh, hell yeah. Bill.
So, and then proceeded to make sure I would catch every tour. They did not. Well, we'll get there. Get ahead of ourselves.
All right, cool. So then, you guys ready to get started on this? We'll get start right at the very beginning. The self-titled debut, or as we like to call it, "Too Fast for Love." A lot of great songs on this album. This was one that, you know, and I'm a little different. I take offense to you trying to lump all of us that came in on Theater of Pain together, because to me, it was Theater of Pain brought me in. But Shout at the Devil and Too Fast for Love was what really made me a Motley Crue fan, was going back and going, wow, this is way better than Theater of Pain.
Thank you. That's what I was worried about. It's okay wherever you jump in. I don't mind that. I just didn't want more people on Rich's side in his whole argument, because his view is Theater of Pain is Motley's best album.
Chris.
No. Oh, not at all.
Nobody does.
I kind of half expected it, that like you it. Would.
I think Andy LaFon agrees with him. Somebody out there agrees with him, but in the minority for sure.
Sorry, Rich.
I thought for sure Chris was going to say, what? Yeah, of course it's their best album. That was Motley Crue's Crazy Nights.
No, that would be Girls, Girls, Girls.
But let's start out with that first album, man. So good. I love every song on here. I really do. This one might be the toughest one for me to personally pick.
Same here. I had a hard time deciding on one for this one.
Yeah, it's sleaze rock at its best, for sure. For sure.
Definitely. If I got to whittle it down, one song above the rest, as difficult as it is, I'm going to go with Piece of Your Action.
Nice.
That's a great one.
I think that's, and it's so hard to say because, I mean, Livewire, Come On and Dance, Public Enemy number one, right on down the line. I love every single song. I even love Toast to the Town, which came out on the Crucial Crue re-releases.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that song wasn't on the original.
Yeah, it's got Stick to Your Guns on it, and it's got Tonight on it.
For me, I almost picked Piece of Your Action also, because that one, I'm doing this a little different. I'm gonna say what my favorite would have been when I first got into the album, and then I'll say if that matches up to today. So when I first got this record, the song On With the Show was my favorite song on this record.
Yeah. That's a great dude.
Yeah.
I like the storytelling in it, and I just like the little muted picking parts in the verses and stuff. And it just, it's always, I loved it. I still like it, but if I had to pick one today, I think Take Me to the Top is my favorite song on this record.
Interesting.
Oh, man. That one's so good, too.
And I think what clinched it for me was when I finally saw the US Festival footage of them playing it, and they're doing the choreographed part with the little harmonic walk down. That was just like, this song fucking rules. And since I saw that footage, this is all, Take Me to the Top has always been my favorite song on this record since then.
Nice, nice. Man, you're making it hard for me. Like, I'm going, away. Chris is right. When you put it like that. But I also see what you're saying about Merry-Go-Round. Like, I remember, man, this must have been 97, 98, there was a place, like a group of people that always hung out at this same place, and we had free run of it. And so it was just like a bunch of young people hanging out, and we'd drink and smoke and play cards and listen to music. And Merry-Go-Round was one of those songs that it seemed so weird and out of place, but everybody knew that song. And every time it would come up on their, you know, million disc changer, everybody would stop and sing along with it. It was such a weird thing, but yeah, that's such a great song. But you're right, I love the storytelling in the song. Crew's good about that over the years, you know, kind of telling those stories, kind of like Dr. Feelgood, you know, stories in the songs. I like that when Molly does it.
Yeah.
All right, Wally.
Well, it's hard to argue with Live Wire. It's just absolutely crunching, and that was probably my favorite for many, many years. But I also always love the melodic punch of Public Enemy Number One. They did actually play that the first time I saw Motley, so it was one of the standout moments for sure.
Can you pick a least favorite song off this album? That's the true test. Yeah. It's hard to pick a least favorite because they're all so good.
This is going to piss Aaron off, but I've never been a giant fan of Merry-Go-Round.
Yeah, I was going to agree. It's just a little too repetitive,
Yeah. But it's got the cool story in it. I like it, though.
It's still fun.
Oh, I never skip it. It's just if I have to pick a least favorite, that would be the one.
On With the Show is so good because it tells a really good story.
Right.
And Crew's good at telling the story songs.
Well, did you hear the story behind what that song's supposed to be about?
On With the Show?
Yeah, it's because the lyrics are Frankie died just the other night.
Right.
Some say it was suicide. Frankie is Nikki Sixx's real name,
right?
And he wrote that about it himself. Basically, when he renamed himself Nikki Sixx, it was his way of burying his old self.
That's very cool. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's what I heard that it was about.
Yeah, that's right from the Dirt book for sure.
But then again, yeah, if it's in the Dirt book, it's questionable.
What?
It's the same guy that kept a diary when he was doing massive amounts of heroin, so take that as you will.
Right, yeah. Sure. So we're all in agreement that the first Motley Crue album is one of the greatest albums ever released of all time.
It's high up there. I don't know if it's up in like the top 10 of ever.
I don't know about top 10, but it's way up there. Well, this next one might be in the top 10 as we go on to Shout at the Devil. Anybody got a favorite song off this one?
Oh, yeah.
Besides all of them,
this one didn't take time at all because it's always been my favorite song on this record since I bought it. First song I heard from this was "Too Young to Fall in Love" from the video. I remember, and I liked it. But the song "Red Hot" is always my favorite song on this record.
That's also my pick.
Killer tune.
Yeah, really.
Okay.
All right, all three of us for Red Hot.
No, not me.
Oh, no? Okay. All right. Well,
actually, it may have been Red Hot early on for me. But after seeing them live as many times as I have, 10 Seconds to Love is definitely my favorite track. Hearing them do that live. And if you saw that footage, there's some YouTube footage on the Girls tour from 10 Seconds to Love. Being a bass player, I just love they would do an extended version live. and Nikki would just keep repeating the bass line, and Nikki would go off on some kind of tirade. But during the Girls, Girls, Girls tour, that's when Nikki would pour the Jack Daniels down Nikki's throat while lying on the stage, still playing that bass riff. It was just too much fun, and it's embedded in my brain. I love that song.
Hell that's yeah. Cool.
So since we're doing the theme of best and worst, what do you think's the worst song on here?
Kill is amazing. Bastard is awesome. Don't really count, you know, God Bless the Children of the Beast. That's kind of just part of Helter Skelter, which is awesome. Red Hot. I mean, I have a hard time not picking Red Hot as my favorite because it's such just a killer rocking song. Like Wally said, Too Young to Fall in Love is killer. So I guess that leaves Knock 'Em Dead Kid, which is badass too. There is no bad song
on
this.
I know.
I think Danger is the worst song.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh yeah, Danger. Yeah, because you still got 10 seconds to Love, which is killer.
If you're telling me which one, if I had to get rid of one track, I might go with Helter Skelter because I could just always live with the Beatles version.
I like this one better.
Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah, I don't know what you'd take off of here. I guess if I had to take one off, pick one worst one, I guess it would have to be Danger. That's the only one that's not as strong as the rest, I guess. But, I mean, not by much because this is a perfect album. There's nothing wrong with it at all. So what do we got? Chris got Red Hot. I got Red Hot. What'd you go with, Wally?
I went 10 Seconds to Love.
Man, so good. So good. I love that album so much. All right, that'll bring us up to Motley Crue's Theater of Pain. This was Chris and myself's introduction. I look back on it myself. Doesn't hold up like when I was a kid. Like when I was a kid, all these songs were my favorite. Now, I don't know. Something funny about this album. There's a few good songs, and there's a lot of weaknesses on this one, too. All right, so here we are, Motley Crue, Theater of Pain. This was the one, Chris, it did it for you, it did it for me. This was my first Motley Crue album. As a kid, man, I loved it. I loved everything about it. I listened to it over and over and over again. But at that time, it was the only Motley Crue album I had. It was the only Motley Crue album I knew. And so it was awesome to me. And then, like I said, then I went back and found Shout at the Devil and was like, oh, wow. And then I went back and found the debut album and was like, whoa. And then all of a sudden, Theater of Pain wasn't quite as cool as it was when it was the only Crue I had. But man, as a teenager, I loved every single one of these songs.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, I had already, you know, had lived with Shout at the Devil and Too Fast for Love. So Theater was the first one I was like eagerly anticipating. And it was a little bit of a letdown after the first two.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Well, yeah, Smoking in the Boys' Room, the video was new at the time. And that was when I told my friend at school, and he had just bought it like a week before. And he was like, I think it sucks. You can have it.
Wow.
So it was. It had been out maybe a month at the most when I got it.
Yeah, I could definitely see how somebody that was a Motley Crue fan from the very beginning got the first one, was like, yeah, got the second one, was like, whoa, got the third one, was like, what? Because they changed so much.
The edge was gone a little. Yeah.
It is a lot slicker than the first two.
But the tour was amazing.
I can imagine.
Yeah. That was Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto and Y&T opening up.
Nice.
And it was a great show. Yeah.
They didn't play a whole lot of songs off this album on the tour, did they?
Wow, that's a long time ago, but I know they played Use It or Lose It, Keep Your Eye on the Money, and of course, Home Sweet Home and Smoking in the Boys' Room.
Right.
Beyond that, I don't remember.
And I don't think a lot of these other songs that you don't mention amongst those four are ones that they really went back to a whole lot at all over their careers. It's weird to look at this. I mean, as a little kid, when I was listening to this, my number one favorite on here was Raise Your Hands to Rock. Because it's so anthemic. It was just like what I liked about Kiss. It was the kind of songs that would make you, you know, for me as a teenager, I was always into this kind of music because it was kind of uplifting, you know. It made you feel cool to like it, you know. A song like Raise Your Hands to Rock, you know, the 13-year-old me was literally doing that. So that song always for me is going to stand out. But now looking back, I'd say, man, I really like Save Our Souls. I mean, that's a weird song, but it's dark and it's cool.
Yeah.
Number one favorite off here, I think, yeah, maybe I'll go with that.
Yeah, the riff on that song is really good.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Save Our Souls. What a weird pick. Cool. But yeah, that jumps out to me right now. What do you guys think?
I have always really liked Keep Your Eye on the Money.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Very melodic, a little different. And they did also play Louder Than Hell on that tour.
Right on.
Okay. Keep Your Eye on the Money's good musically, but I think the lyrics are kind of dopey on that one.
Yeah.
It's a Las Vegas party song.
Yeah. And when I first got this, I mean, I'm a ballad guy. I loved Home Sweet Home at the time just because it's so damn catchy. But for the heavier songs, I think I used to love Louder Than Hell the most.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a cheat because it was actually called Hotter Than Hell and it was a demo for Shout at the Devil. So that's it's right. Not – it wasn't really written for this record. So to be fair – the one that I like the most now is Tonight We Need a Lover. I love the guitar playing on that song.
Wow, nice.
And I love how it speeds up at the end, too. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
What do you think's the worst thing on here?
The opener never did much for me, City Boy Blues.
It's not a great opener.
No.
Yeah, City Boy Blues is kind of weak compared to some of this other stuff. I don't know. I was never really a big fan of We Need a Lover Tonight. When I was young, that was my least favorite song on here. Looking at it now, maybe Rich is right about this. This album ain't as bad. When you really look at the song list, the tracks on it, I mean, nothing's terrible.
I think it hurts it because it's got a bad opener. It's not City Boy Blues is not a terrible song, but it's not the right song. I think Tonight We Need a Lover would have been a great song to open the record, honestly, because of the way it has the energy that it has. But it also has a bad ending with Fight for Your Rights. I think that's the least good song on the record.
For Your Rights. I don't know. I kind of dug that, too.
Yeah, but do you need to hear Vince Neil singing about Martin Luther King? I mean,
yeah, he's not Bono.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, wait a minute. He did grow up in Compton. Don't forget
you
that.
You want to hear Vince Neil do Boys in the Hood?
He was one.
It's killer filler.
Yeah, I think so too. I think a lot of these songs on here are pretty good.
I think if the production was a little bit rawer, I think people would like it more.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think the production's
kind of... I do think Home Sweet Home is the most well-crafted song on the album, but I just generally am not going to be picking a ballad.
Okay, I'll be the guy.
Well, you look at that song, man. That song kind of started something, you know, as far as the ballads go. I mean, I guess it really didn't start something because bands have been writing ballads about being on the road since bands were touring. But that song, when it came on MTV and on the radio, it really totally influenced everybody after that as far as we've got to have a home sweet home.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the blueprint for all the bands that wanted to be them.
Yep. And there were a lot of them.
Perfect. Right?
Yeah. It's a great video.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't hate it. It is an awesome song.
You know, I don't care much for Tommy Lee's recent output, but he did a good job on that song.
Bananas.
All right, I guess that brings us up to the next one. This would be my second Motley Crue album I ever owned, and that is Girls, Girls, Girls. I remember this one because I had Theater of Pain. I hadn't gone back yet at this point and discovered the first two. So at this point, all I know is Theater of Pain, and now Girls, Girls, Girls is coming out. And
Girls, Girls, Girls before Shout. Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
and had to ask my parents for this one. I think it was birthday or something. You know, they were bribing me in some way. And this was one I had to have new. I remember hearing it on, like, the Rick D's Top 40 show, the song Girls, Girls, Girls.
Rick D's.
I'll never forget listening to my little blue Walkman with my headphones on and jamming on that and listening. I listen on Sunday mornings just to hear a band like this because now I'm into Crew and I want to hear more. And I remember hearing Girls, Girls, Girls on that. I remember where I was standing, you know, thinking back on it and thinking, I got to get this. And so however I had to do, whatever it was, if I had a birthday coming up or if I had to, man, what, you need me to chop some firewood? I'll do that. I need that Motley Crue album. And so I got this one when it was new on LP and brought it home, put the needle down. We talked about how weak of an opening song that City Boy Blues was for Theater of Pain. Not the case for Girls, 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 because the first thing I heard was Wild Side, and to this day, that is one of my all-time favorite Motley Crue songs. Man, that opening track, so powerful, so strong, such an awesome riff. I got to go with Wild Side. You just can't beat it. It's one of the best songs Motley Crue ever did.
I'm 110% in agreement with you. That was the first one I heard on it, and to this day, I think it's one of the best songs they ever did. And it's considered overplayed by them, but I still love Girls, Girls, Girls. I could go the rest of my life and never hear that song again and be fine.
Yeah.
But Wild Side, especially Nicky's bass part. I know he didn't get a lot of credit for his bass playing, but I love the helicopter style bass part he's doing on that. And, you know, it's got a little bit of cowbell to it. Love that one. So that's definitely my number one for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to make that three because they're absolutely my favorite track and my favorite, quite possibly my favorite Motley Crue track complete. Live, it's amazing. Doesn't matter which tour you're talking about. And once again, Maple Leaf Gardens and Whitesnake opened the show. This was a very cool afternoon. I remember sitting in high school, we had the really, really cool science teacher, and me and my buddy were absolutely bouncing off the walls, trying to get out of class to head to Toronto and catch this concert. And finally, my teacher had enough of us and said, "What is wrong with you two?" So we told her, we said, "Well, we're excited because we're going to see Motley Crue tonight." She went, "Get out of here." So she let us leave early. It was fantastic.
Nice. Yep. Awesome. Well, then what's really cool about this album, I think, is since we're all in agreement with Wildside being the best song on this album, I'd be willing to bet that we'd probably all agree on the worst song on this album, too.
I don't know.
You think there's something on here worse than Nona?
Well, do you really want to count Nona? It's a minute and 26 seconds. I mean, I guess it's more of an interlude than a song, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. But I just remember when I was a kid, and you got to remember, I'm probably, you know, 14, 15 years old, and I'm getting this, and, you know, Wild Side, and Girls, 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 and Dancing on Glass, and Bad Boy Boogie, and what?
Nicky's tribute to his grandmother.
Yeah.
It was all weird. Right. If you don't count Nona, which we're going to call an interlude because it is only less than a minute and a half, and a little tribute to grandma that passed away. We can respect that. And not counting Jailhouse Rock, which is kind of cool, but out of place on this album. I would have rather had one more real song. What's the worst song on the album?
I can't stand Bad Boy Boogie. I've never liked that song.
Yeah, looking at the rest of them.
I got to agree on that.
Something for Nothing is pretty good. All in the Name of is still something I really like. Dancing on Glass is cool. Girls, 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 you can't deny. You're All I Need is probably one of the coolest sweet love ballads of the 80s.
Did you ever hear about John Bon Jovi complimenting that song to Nikki Sixx?
Uh-uh.
I don't know.
They like ran into each other on the road or something, and John Bon Jovi goes, "That's one of the best love songs I've ever heard."
Yeah,
and he's like, "Dude, it's about a guy killing his girlfriend."
I just love it was written in response to that actor's name. He was on Beverly Hills. Melrose Place.
Oh, it was Jack Wagner.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Who also had a huge hit with a song of the same name. Totally different song.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Is that because of Heather Locklear?
No.
I thought she was dating him before.
I can't remember the whole story, but yeah. It was Wagner was dating one of Nikki's ex-girlfriends, which wouldn't have been Heather. So.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I need to write a song to stick it to my girlfriend's ex-boyfriend. And he wrote a song called You're All I Need that's all rainbows and sunshine. So I'm going to write a song called You're All I Need, and it's going to be the darkest, sweet love ballad ever.
And that video was banned in Canada.
It was banned in the U.S. too.
Oh, was it too?
I don't remember ever seeing that.
It got shown for like a week, I think, and then MTV pulled it.
Wow. Right?
Yeah, you can see it on YouTube, though, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to have to go check that out. I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's not really super graphic. I just think it's the subject matter of the song pissed a lot of parents off.
Yeah, yeah. It's not what you expect when you hear a song like that. There's so many sweet love ballads are so syrupy and just bleh, but that one's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's not that.
It lulls you in, and then you're like, wait, what is this? So we're in agreement. The best song on Girls, Girls, Girls is Wild Side, and the worst song is Bad Boy Boogie.
And yeah, for me.
Consensus.
Wow, that's easy. A consensus. How you like that? That brings us up to quite possibly Motley Crue's most popular album, especially when it was new.
Commercially, for sure.
Dr. Feelgood. It was a good time to be a Motley Crue fan.
Oh, yeah.
It was a good time just to be a rocker when this album came out. This is a special thing right here. You know, Chris and I have done a special with BJ Kahuna on the Rock and or Roll show and talked about this album. And man, that brought up so many great memories for me, because when I look at this, this is so much more than just an album. This is a snapshot of maybe the greatest time to be alive.
It was a great time to be a fan of that music, because it had crossed over into the mainstream at that point. You could not escape hard rock in those days.
No, it was awesome. Oh man, I love it.
And to add to it, I was just hitting drinking age.
Nice.
So it was perfect.
Nice.
Well, when you heard the last song on the record, you needed a drink, I'm sure.
That was getting there.
So I guess let's get it out of the way. What's the worst song on the album? It's Time for Change.
Yeah, it was time to change the channel.
I don't know if I've told this story before on the show. There was they used to do pep rallies for whatever, like the football team or whatever had a game coming up, and so they'd make everybody come to the gymnasium and sit in the up in the bleachers, and they'd make like some kind of presentation. And I remember one time the group of whoever, like the most pretentious goobers in school. And they did this big lip syncing thing where they did Time for Change, but they like came out into the crowd and were like lip syncing like they were singing to us. It was just the lamest thing ever. It's like, damn it, Motley Crue, why do you give these people this opportunity with a song like this?
Okay, yeah. So that's obviously the consensus. But if you had to pick another one for the I got one, but go ahead.
This will be one that'll probably not get much agreement, and it may be because I'm so sick of it, but I never liked it, even when it was a hit, was Don't Go Away Mad.
I never liked
that song.
They still play that, they would, till the last tour, they would play it every time. That was my go to the bathroom tune. Boring song.
Yeah, that one's not that great. I was looking either between that one or, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's got to be that one, because the rest of the album's pretty damn good. Maybe, I don't know, Slice of Your Pie sometimes is...
It's cheese, but I'll still watch it and not go to the bathroom.
Well, this album had it was plagued with some, like, horrific lyrics on top of good music.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Like, Slice of Your Pie has a great swagger to it musically, yes, but yeah. lyrically it's fucking cringe. And then Rattlesnake Shake, terrible lyrics, but yeah. that got a ton of great playing on it.
Yeah, and again, you talk about like how at this time Motley Crue was kind of trying to be Aerosmith. When you talk about those two songs, Slice Your Pie and Rattlesnake Shake, either one of them would have fit perfectly on the Aerosmith album coming out at this time.
Yeah, you're right.
Definitely. And, well, wait a minute. We overlooked something here. I take back Don't Go Away Mad. I have to put Without You as the next bad song.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I'm a ballads guy, and even I'm not a fan of that
one. Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, I don't really like Without You either. If I had to remove two songs off here, it would definitely be Time for Change and Without You, without question.
Yeah, I mean, we did with Time for Change, they should have stayed on drugs because we didn't need a hard rock version of We Are the World.
Well, and that was the other bummer thing about it, too, because as, like you said, it was such an awesome time to be a rock fan, but this was kind of marked a little bit of a change in the weather, too, in it, because, like, you'd be like, yeah, Motley Crue, new album, and I love the songs, you know, I love She Goes Down, Sticky Sweet, and Dr. Feelgood, and Kickstart My Heart, but then when you're sitting in front of the MTV with your friends, what are they playing without you? And it's like, you know, your buddies that are starting to get into Metallica and stuff are like,
yeah, they would have been smart not to put Without You out as a single.
Yeah, you're right.
Because Guns N' Roses was coming in, too. They had no, other than Sweet Child of Mine, they didn't really have any ballads either.
Yeah.
So they would have kept more of their edge if they didn't put Without You out as a single, I think.
Yeah, that hurt it, because that single wasn't, it was a hit.
And it didn't do well.
It was, I mean, yeah, but it, they play it, it got pushed, I guess. It wasn't a good song.
Oh, it sounded like it was a half-assed ballad to me.
Yeah, it was weak. It was weak.
You're all, in the ballad battle, You're All I Need totally blows the doors off of Without You.
Oh, yeah.
So are we going to have a consensus on best song? I'm going with the title track. I don't think anything is better than that. Yeah.
Kickstart's got the great riff. But I, as for the complete song, Dr. Feelgood, for sure.
Man, I always got to look to the deep cuts. You know, I think Sticky Sweet and She Goes Down are such great tunes. But, yeah, it's hard to argue. I think I'm gonna agree with you guys. You got to – it's a complete song, top to bottom. This was so cool because when Motley Crue was back with a new album, the first thing was Dr. Feelgood, and that was cool. You know, that was something you could sit with in a room full of Metallica fans and be like, hell yeah, Motley Crue.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm going to agree with you guys. Dr. Feelgood, title track, best song on here.
Go ahead.
Possibly the best guitar riff they ever wrote.
Yeah. I'll give runner-up to – actually, I love Same Old Situation. I think that's a great track, too.
A little poppy, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a fun song. I really got sick of that video, though. MTV ran that one into the ground.
Yeah.
I did not mention. I did catch the Dr. Feelgood tour twice in Buffalo with Warrant opening up, and then in Toronto at the Toronto Blue Jays Sky Dome with Tesla.
Right on.
That's a good lineup.
Hell yes, Wally. That's awesome.
And Kim, before we dive into the self-titled 94 record, I know we're not doing compilations, but I got to say, Primal Scream is one of my favorite songs that they ever did. Oh.
Yeah, I guess before we jump ahead, we can take a little pit stop with Decade of Decadence, because, I mean, that, too, was another album that was super important to me.
Primal Scream on that was a game changer. That was a great, great addition to the live set, for sure.
I mean, even Rock and Roll Junkie and Teaser are badass on here.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That was a pretty big deal. At this point, when Decade Decadence comes out, at this point, I've heard Shout at the Devil, and I've heard the first album.
Right.
So it was in between Girls, Girls, Girls and Dr. Feelgood when I finally then went back. And so by the time this came out, it was kind of a... Man, do I want to buy this album? I'm sure back then it was probably cassette tape at this point. I'm certain I had this on cassette. Do I want to get that on cassette? I already know most of the songs on it, but there's some songs on here I've never heard. Like, even Angela isn't bad. as far as like a upbeat rocker, kind of just a fun song.
I liked it.
I always just thought, notice that the chorus on Angela sounds just like a rewrite of Don't Go Away Mad.
Oh, see, now I used to like it.
I'm just saying.
And what about the cover of Anarchy in the UK? I always love that.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
So other than all the songs you already heard before, Decade of Decadence deserves a mention because there are some damn good new songs on there that people hadn't heard before.
And even the remix of Piece of Your Action, I think, is better than the original.
Suppose technology was a little bit better at that point.
Yeah. I gotta go back and A-B them. I honestly don't think I ever did.
Got a fuller sound.
Right.
Okay, so that brings us up to a totally different thing. A whole new era for Motley Crue. Motley Crue goes on in 1994, but not with Vince Neil, who's gone solo. This is a whole new Motley Crue with a whole new singer. A guy we all know and like a lot, John Corabi. When Motley Crue comes out with their self-titled album, it's so hard to pick. This is so good. I mean, Wally, Chris, and everybody knows how Chris and I feel about this album. What did you, as a longtime Crue fan, think about it when Vince Neil left and Motley Crue carries on with a new singer?
Yeah, well, if I remember it correctly, I mean, Crue were my band. It was Crue and Kiss right through. And I remember many interviews with the guys, and it was, you know, questions would be asked if somebody left the band, and they would always state, oh, the band would be over, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, that did not transpire. And I kind of rolled my eyes and went, that figures. But I was totally skeptical. I had already kind of witnessed the whole Van Halen situation by this point with Hagar, and I was Team Roth in that battle, but I was totally pissed that they were gonna switch it up, but I was willing to give it a chance because they were my band and I didn't want it to stop. If that was the alternative, let's see what this new guy brings to the table.
Nice. Predisposed to not trust it, but still willing to give it a shot because it's Motley Crue.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember Metal Edge was where I first saw the news that, Vince Neil being kicked out of the band was big news. I remember even mainstream talk shows were talking about that. But then everything went quiet. It basically, like, the mainstream media was like, all right, we're done with these guys. But Metal Edge magazine, they picked up on it really early because I remember it was still just a rumor. They were like, John Corabi of the band The Scream is auditioning for Motley Crue. I remember actually reading that.
Wow.
And that's when I checked out the Scream record because of that article. And but I remember thinking, I don't know how this is going to work. But pleasantly surprised when it came out.
Oh, yeah. When I heard Hooligan's Holiday for the first time, I totally embraced it. I was all in. I loved it. I was so disappointed that this would be the first tour that I would not get to see because it was so commercially disastrous that they never made it to Toronto.
Dang.
Yep.
Yeah, see, I remember this kind of like Chris. I remember reading about it and being like, wow, what's going to happen, you know? And then I was real lucky to grow up where I did because we had a really cool rock radio station. And this is years before I ever got to work there. I was a kid listening to it. And they had a big deal about the Central Wisconsin premiere of the new Motley Crue song. And I remember knowing that Vince Neil's out of the band. I don't remember if I heard Vince Neil's solo album first or not, but I do remember this being a big deal to me because I had to be listening at, 7 o'clock tonight, the new Motley Crue song. And I heard it and was like, wow. It was Hooligan's Holiday and was totally blown away by it and loved it, you know, and was one of those things where it's like, I kind of felt like I shouldn't love it because it's not the Motley Crue that I like. But kind of like you, being skeptical about it and not even wanting to like it, but it couldn't be denied because Hooligan's Holiday was such a good song that all of a sudden I really didn't care that, you know, Vince Neil was out of the band. I still had all these old awesome albums, you know, and I could go back and listen to any one of them anytime I wanted to. But I like the new stuff so much that all of a sudden being bummed out about Vince Neil being gone didn't hurt anymore. This was all right.
We were the silent minority that didn't help bring this album to success, unfortunately. But it would have been a huge record. And man, picking a favorite off this one sucked. I went back and forth on this a lot. But if I have to pick right now, I'd say "Smoke the Sky" is probably my favorite song.
Really? Eh?
Nice, because that's what I picked too. How funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, totally. I've always loved that song. That's always been my favorite song off this album because it's a, you know, it's a pot smoker song. I like that. You know, it's fun, but it's hard and rocking. It's hard to pick one song off here because, I mean, really, it's all so good. There's really, I'm telling you, I'd have a way harder time picking a worse song than I do a best song because they're all the best songs. This whole thing is one awesome, awesome album. This is another one. I'll call it. It's a perfect album. It's the second perfect album in Motley Crue's discography.
Well, and I had friends that were Motley fans that just absolutely hated this record. They hated Hooligan's Holiday, and then Misunderstood came out, and they didn't like that either. But the one song I could usually bring to them to say, you like old school Motley, this has a bit of that feel, was Poison Apples. And they would like that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Still way heavier, though.
It's heavier, but it's catchier than the rest of the record.
Yeah. It was a 1-2-3 punch for me. The Power to the Music, Uncle Jack, and Hooligan's Holiday. By that, my jaw was on the floor.
Yeah.
And Karabi was the guy. It was awesome. I have always loved Uncle Jack. Not quite the barn-burning tempo, but just so powerful.
Yeah, you're 100% really right about that. Lyrics. Talk about a 1-2-3 punch to kick off an album. Yeah. Power to the Music is a great, great opening track. And then it's perfect. The intro to this album is perfect.
On even the, you know, as heavy as this record is, it even has a ballad on it. And I think Drift Away is a great ballad.
Yep.
Yeah, if I was going to pick the worst song in this album, I guess that's what it would have to be. Is Drift Away,
really?
Only because the rest of it's so awesome, and I don't even have a problem with this song.
Well, for me, my least favorite on it, it's not a terrible song, but this is like the one that I'll usually skip is Dropping Like Flies. I don't care much for that one.
Hmm.
Yeah, see, I like that too.
Yeah, me too. I gotta have to agree with Aaron on that. I'd go Drift Away if I had to. I wouldn't want to either.
So then, coming out of Motley Crue's self-titled 1994, things get even more confusing because Vince Neil's back. But this ain't the Dr. Feelgood that you remember. Up next, coming up for us, is Motley Crue Generation Swine. And I remember, man, Motley Crue has really played with my emotions over the years as I look back on this because it went from being so excited about Dr. Feelgood and Decade of Decadence, and then all of a sudden everything's different, and you go, okay, I accept that Motley Crue's different because they are awesome. You know, I love this new direction they're going in. It's okay. Vince Neil is doing his own albums, and those are really good too. So it's almost like having the best of both worlds. Vince Neil's happy. He's putting out Motley Crue-style music. Motley Crue's happy. They got this awesome new singer, and they're putting out music that is just unbelievably different but still awesome to anything they've ever done before. But wait, Vince Neil's back. But it's not going to be like the Vince Neil that it used to be. I was so confused, but was still so excited. Man, what an emotional brain mess this is. Because now I'm excited because Vince Neil's back, but I'm sad because John Corabi's gone. But I'm excited because I love the old Motley Crue. But what you get is Generation Swine.
Oh. So fucking bad. This album sucks.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I hate this record with a passion. This is their music from the Elder to me.
Yeah.
It's definitely their music from the Elder, but for sure. I love music from the Elder.
Well, that's your problem.
This, I mean, I was one of those the very few totally disappointed people when I got the news that Vince was coming back, because like Aaron said, Vince could do the party stuff and Motley could continue with Karabi, and I was more than happy with that.
Yeah.
Although, again, I didn't get to see the Motley 94 tour because I never made it to Toronto. And guess what? Neither did Generation Swine. Actually, that's not true. I think they played a club, and I, you know, living in Hamilton at the time, to get to Toronto to get to a club show generally did not happen. So two tours in a row I missed. Not happy.
Hmm. It's not like you were that excited to hear the songs off this album live anyway.
You're not wrong. Although I there's some gems on there.
There are. There's three or four, yeah. Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, I've always thought Afraid was decent. I as far as strong enough to be a single, I don't know. And I loved Rat Like Me. I thought that was decent.
Yeah.
But my favorite track is Beauty.
I went with the same one, but yeah. I still don't think it's any good, but I went with that one.
I think it's cool too. Very different.
Yeah, I went with Afraid. I don't okay. know. Afraid's yep. a decent song. Hey, these songs could have been... This is one of them weird albums where it's like, I wish they could go back and redo Generation Swine, because... I mean, this is maybe the opposite of the problem with Dr. Feelgood, where Dr. Feelgood, the music was really good. The lyrics were kind of goofy. With this one, there's some really good lyrical things going on in a lot of these songs, but musically, it's just, it don't fit. You know, it's something, this whole album is so weird, and I remember this was a big deal too on that same radio station, and they made a big deal about Vince Neil being back, and it was the same thing, two albums in a row. You know, Friday night, 7 o'clock, the debut of the new Motley Crue song, and Vince Neil's back, and you're gonna hear it. And I remember tuning in for that too, and it being a big deal, and them giving away tickets to go see Motley Crue, and it was a big thing, the Generation Swine. Actually, you know what? I kind of like the title track, too.
Yeah, you're right.
That's yeah, I'm going to change mine from Afraid to the title track. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, as far as bad on here, there's a lot of bad. I got a crazy story about a song on this album.
Okay.
When I worked at the strip club in Wausau, Wisconsin, I met a lot of different girls, very talented in each in their own way. But there was only one girl who ever came into the booth and said, "Do you have the song Glitter by Motley Crue?" And I looked at her. I was like, what? I mean, yeah, I got the CD because I bought it on the day it came out, and I guess I could bring it in. But really? Glitter? And she was like, "I love that song." I was like, I don't know if you're the coolest chick I ever met or if you are completely insane. Take my chances. I'll bring the song in. Because I'll never turn down a pretty girl telling me to play Motley Crue, but don't talk to me ever again, because clearly you are out of your mind. But she did. She danced that song every night, and I was like, I can't believe some girl would ask for track number 7 off of Generation Swine. Yeah.
Well, meth's a hell of a drug.
It's the only time anybody's ever requested that song.
That I believe.
And I never understood it because it's like I tried to tell her, I mean, I love Motley Crue. I think it's super cool that you like this song, but nobody in a strip club with dollars in their hands wants to hear somebody singing about, "I want to put a baby inside of you."
It was like
so weird.
She dances to that song, then she goes to the guy sitting down. And she's like, "You want a lap dance?" He's like, "Well, I did until you danced to that piece of shit."
Yeah. Yeah, I'm telling you.
That's not the worst song on the album.
Oh, no.
No. Oh, no. No.
We know what the worst song is.
This album actually features one of the worst songs of all time.
I'll agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Without question, the worst Motley Crue song of all time. And I wasn't even a big fan of the new version of Shout at the Devil.
Yeah, that was pointless.
But nothing will ever reach the depths of the song Brandon.
She's your mom.
A song so bad, it would drive a child named Brandon to grow up and assault his own father for writing a song about him.
Yeah, that was a long time coming. Motley Crue fans everywhere said, thank you.
And the judge said, dismissed. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's so strange talking about if I'm looking at the CD stack, it's only Dr. Feelgood to Motley Crue 94 to Generation Swine. Now, the feeling of being a Motley Crue fan for Dr. Feelgood versus being kind of confused but still okay Motley Crue fan for 94 to one album later just being, I don't even know what this is anymore.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I grew up with Motley Crue, literally. We had our fun stage, and then we had our kind of confusing stage, and then we had our angry, stupid stage. But now we're going to get to the next one, Motley Crue, New Tattoo. The only album that doesn't feature Tommy Lee on it.
Yep.
Were you guys excited about this album? Because I know, as funny as it seems, I sure was, and I bought this on the day of release.
I was kind of over them. Well, not over. I mean, I always be a fan. I always listen to the older stuff. But after Generation Swine, and I was let down because I wanted Karabi to be the singer going forward. So I was just kind of like, they tried to do Karabi-type album with Swine, and that didn't work. But I'm glad Karabi got the hell away from that. But then it's like, it's a return to form for Motley Crue. And when I heard Hell on High Heels, and later I heard the rest of the album, it's like, it's not like the worst thing they've ever done or anything, but like you can tell Tommy Lee's not on this record, and like his drum parts are a huge part of their sound, and it didn't. It's just it's an okay record, but it never really captured me like I hoped it would.
Yeah, for me, I was so excited about it because anytime Motley Crue comes out with something new, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be there on release day. I'm going to be getting it. It's going to be in my hand because Motley Crue is not a band I want to miss when it comes to new music. And so this one was no different. And I remember playing this at a party and somebody going, is this Motley Crue? I'd be like, hell yeah. I'd be like, wow, I've never heard this song before. I'd be like, because it's brand new. And they'd be like, there's a new Motley Crue album out, and it sounds like this. Man, when I heard Hell on Heels, and this is, man, I freaking love that song. And to me, without question, Hell on High Heels is the best song on this album. I really like all of it. But that tone on that guitar, that riff, that's so Motley Crue. So Motley Crue. If I think you put together greatest hits for Motley Crue today, Hell on High Heels has got to be on there. But I mean, there's a lot of good stuff on here. I really like the cover of White Punks on Dope.
Yeah, that's a great cover.
I like Punched in the Teeth by Love is really good. Drag Strip Superstar is pretty cool. Not a big fan of the title track. That's kind of a new tattoo kind of falls in there with Without You. It's
Don't
kind of the
mad.
Same song. But this was the album that should have come out after Dr. Feelgood. If they were if they were going to continue to be Motley Crue, that would have been the album that should have came out then. Another song on this album that's really, really good is a song called Fake, which is the
That's my favorite.
It's a quintessential Motley Crue song. Yeah, see, I look at that. I forgot about Fake.
That's my favorite track for sure.
Yeah, I guess as good as Hell on High Heels is, I'll put it in second place behind Fake because Fake is so good.
I still think Hell on High Heels is the best thing on there. And then you like a lot of stuff on here I don't like.
Really?
I don't like Drag Strip Superstar. The worst song, easily in my opinion, is First Band on the Moon. That song's terrible.
No. New Tattoo is worse. I like that.
I do. It's so bad, but I love it.
Oh, we're going to have to agree to disagree there, guys.
But this was Motley Crue being what Motley Crue always was. Right. They weren't trying to be different like they were on 94. They weren't trying to be pretentious like they were on Generation Swine. This was legit. You know, this was real Motley Crue. And it's no wonder at this time Tommy Lee didn't want nothing to do with this. You know, I got to imagine he probably felt like, you know, Motley Crue 94 was what they should have stuck with. And then when they got Vince back, but still tried to do the 94 sort of direction with Because Tommy Lee is all over Generation Swine. You get so much sampling and so much weird triggered drums and things like that. And his own song, which is awful, to go from that to, no, now it's time to do Dr. Feelgood Part 2. Yeah, I could totally understand why Tommy Lee didn't want nothing to do with that, but the rest of the band was like, this is what we should have been doing all along.
Well, to make a comparison for why this album doesn't really do a lot for me is similar to Kiss fans that don't get a big rise out of Sonic Boom, where it kind of feels like we're trying to do what we should have done, but I just don't sense the chemistry here. It feels like they'd been apart for too long and they weren't getting along, and it sounds like the result of a band not getting along, also missing a giant piece of the puzzle.
This album, I think, should be called Vince's Revenge.
Okay.
Or subtitled I Told You So by Vince Neil, because Vince obviously went along with what Crew was doing for Generation Swine and it didn't work, and so this was his chance to say I told you so, this was the album we should have done all along. But in the end it didn't really matter,
right, because when this came
out, nobody cared about Motley Crue except for maybe the three of us and the 1,000 people listening to this right now.
It bombed pretty bad. And I saw the tour for this when they had Randy, and no disrespect to Randy Castillo.
No, awesome drummer. You're right. Maybe there's some chemistry missing there, but you definitely can't take that away from him, because Randy Castillo is one of the greatest rock drummers of all time. That's almost like if you can't have Tommy Lee, here's Randy Castillo. It's like, well, okay, all right, we can make this work.
I saw them at the amphitheater here in Nashville with Scorpions opening. It was when Randy was playing drums. And the Scorpions were fucking amazing. They were just awesome. And then Motley Crue came out and stunk up the joint. Randy played fine, but like the mix was terrible. And Aaron Roll, you remember going to shows at Starwood. Like if you sit out in the grass area, the mix is just god awful. You can't hear worth a damn.
Yeah.
And Mick Mars's guitar was like 3,000 times louder than everything else. My ears were literally in pain for 3 days after that show, just from Mick's solos. And Vince was a sloppy drunk mess. Not a good show, but yeah. And like I know they did Hell on High Heels at that show. I don't think they did anything else from this album.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. They may have, but I don't remember. But Hell on High, like the audience just could not give a shit less about hearing that song.
Yeah.
Interesting, because I caught that tour as well. So you got to see it with Randy.
Yeah. It was before Samantha. You saw him with Samantha Malone.
Yeah. I saw it with Samantha. Now, and the Scorpions didn't make the trek up to Toronto. So it was Motley and Megadeth.
Oh, that's a good lineup.
Yeah. And that said, Megadeth did not have the greatest night. And Motley played great that night. So, and they did play. They played Punched in the Teeth, First Band on the Moon, and Hell in High Heels.
Okay. Well, it rained the entire time I saw them too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we had a great night, but it was fun.
I'm surprised that they didn't do Fake. That was a song. I kind of wish they'd released Fake as the single. You know, maybe more people would have paid attention to it. But Hell on High Heels is badass too. Those are two totally Motley Crue songs. But like you said, you know, is Motley Crue really into this? I mean, at this point, you feel like Vince Neil would rather be solo. I could be doing these songs by myself. And Motley Crue, the rest from Tommy Lee, don't even want to be a part of it. And the other two guys are probably just like, well, you know, the other way didn't work, so I guess let's try this. And where's the love and the passion in that, you know? It's not there. It's not like on Shout at the Devil. The passion is in that music. I don't know. These are some good songs. Not a lot of oomph behind them. Not a lot of heart and not a lot of passion, I don't think.
But right. Still better than Generation Swine.
But still way better than Generation Swine. But not as good as Motley Crue 94.
Correct.
All right. So we're all on the same page here as we roll up on what I guess will be Motley Crue's final full-length studio album, The Saints of Los Angeles. It had been a minute since Motley Crue's New Tattoo came out. And so now at this point, it's many years later, Tommy Lee's back in the band. This is the first album from a reunited Motley Crue in a long time. Were you guys excited for it? Because I know I sure was, just like every album so far.
Yeah, I was interested in it. I mean, I was more excited for this one than I was New Tattoo. I think because there was kind of a resurgence of this type of music at that time. And
yeah.
And I remember this one got a lot better press leading up to it than New Tattoo, because New Tattoo came out at a very rough time for this music. So there was, the general public was embracing it. And I remember this got a lot more media attention in the lead up about it. But I do think it was a bit of a overhype type thing, because this got hyped to the fucking gills. And it's a good album. I don't think it's as good as the band themselves hyped it to be at the time, but it's overall better than New Tattoo, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It is a good album. There's some bad stuff on here.
Ooh, yeah.
But there's really a handful of really, really good ones on here, too. What do you guys think? What's the very best song on this album?
Prior to this, of course, building that hype and that momentum was the reunion Red, White, and Crue tour. Yep. And that double greatest hits package. And I do want to throw out Sick Love Song on that collection is the last great Motley Crue track, in my opinion.
That is a good
absolutely
song.
Absolutely kills.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, and so that really was what, to me, was the catalyst of the extra hype for Saints of Los Angeles, which to me is kind of, I find it akin to like, in a way, Kiss's Psycho Circus. I see some comparisons there that it to me was not a band record. I think this is heavily, heavily 6 a.m. writing Motley Crue songs.
Yeah, it's a DJ Ashby album.
Yeah, yeah. And although I love some of it, I would pick New Tattoo over Saints of Los Angeles.
Wow.
But I like 6 a.m., so that's why I like this record.
Yeah, I could see it in the production, too. You know, in the production of this album, yeah. They're Motley Crue songs. So even if DJ Ashba wrote a lot of it with Nikki, I mean, they're writing it as if they're writing for Motley Crue. But the production of it is kind of, I don't know, a little too modern for me.
Exactly how I feel, yeah.
Bob Rock needed to produce this one and be like, just remember those Polaroids you took of the soundboards way back then? Yeah, pull those out and set everything back to 1989, and then let's record this bad boy.
Do not disagree.
I think the title track's the best thing on it.
Absolutely.
I'm a little partial to Down at the Whiskey.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like that. It's kind of like one of those, like we talked about when we started this today, the story songs, you know, that Motley Crue are good at. And that, what better story to tell than your own, you know? And it's got a good kind of, I don't know, just an early Motley Crue kind of feel to it. Another one that you guys probably think is weird of me to like, but I always kind of wondered what The Animal in Me would have done if it was released as a single off of Dr. Feelgood instead of Without You. How would that have affected the world?
It's better than Without You.
I do like that song. I agree with you there.
See, I do too. I listen to that and say if that was released in 88, 89, that would have been massive.
Not a lot of love for Chicks Equal Trouble?
That's probably the worst one, I think. Yeah, pretty easily the worst one. Just Another Psycho is cool. I like that. Another Psycho kind of reminds me of like a John Corabi song.
Yeah, I can hear that.
Like that would have been better with John Corabi singing it in 94. White Trash Circus don't really do it for me.
Yeah.
Going Out Swinging is pretty cool.
Not a fan of that one.
Yeah, Motherfucker of the Year is kind of, that's a 6 a.m. song for sure.
Yeah.
But This Ain't a Love Song, I think, is a good one. I think that's a good track.
Yeah, I do
off
dig
of
that
here.
One. Yeah.
So I think This Ain't a Love Song would probably be my number two behind Down at the Whiskey, and then probably the title track.
Is that the one that says This Ain't a Love Song, This Is a Fuck Song?
Yeah.
That song's stupid. Come on.
I don't know. It's kind of cool. I like the music, I guess.
Okay.
When you say it, it's not cool, but when Vince Neil does it, It's different, well, you know.
I'm not as cool as Vince Neil, so he wins.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
Okay. To me, it just didn't come off as a Motley record, but
yeah, it's yeah. okay. It was cool to have something with their name on it come out at that time, though.
Sure, yeah,
yeah, because it was at a time like Chris was saying, you know, when New Tattoo came out, and I'm going, yeah, Motley Crue's got a new album out, and people are going, really? I had no idea. This one, people were actually kind of excited about because it was at that time where everything had changed by then. You know, at a time when New Tattoo came out, people still made fun of you for liking Motley Crue. Well, by the time Saints of Los Angeles came out, everybody loved Motley Crue.
It's kind of weird with New Tattoo, and also this goes to like Poison doing Power to the People. Like those bands could tour and do really well at that time because the nostalgia was starting to kick in. But God, people just got skewered them for putting out records. You know, yeah. It was like, you know, I'll listen to you play Wild Side and talk dirty to me, but I don't want to hear a new record from you.
Yeah, see, and for me that sucks because personality wise, I'm the total opposite of that. And I know Chris, you're the same, and Wally, you're the same. And if you're listening to the Decibel Geek podcast, you're the same too, because there ain't nothing better than new music from your favorite artists. If Kiss came out with a new album tomorrow, I'd be happy about that. You know,
sure.
AC/DC came out with an album last week and I'm super happy about that. You know, Keep creating, please. I don't want to see my favorite artists get stagnant. I don't want to see them going, all right, you know, every rose has its thorn for the bazillionth time. Here we go. No, I want to see these bands be stimulated and create and create and create.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a drag that some of them feel they have to sell 10 million copies to make it worth their while.
Yeah. So do you guys think we'll ever see another full-length Motley Crue album?
Nah.
I hope not.
You hope not.
But if it was coming out tomorrow, would you go buy it?
Of course. Yeah,
of course we would. But because we love Motley Crue so much, we owe it to him to at least check it out.
I know that those last few singles have been brutal.
Yeah. We didn't talk about the Dirt soundtrack and how bad those songs were.
That's better left unsaid.
Yeah.
But I do know that Mick's new album is supposed to come out in the first quarter of next year.
Finally. Really?
Yes.
I hope so.
I know somebody that worked on it.
Oh, awesome. Okay, that makes me happy.
Right on. I'm so excited to hear that. That's like an Axl Rose thing. I've been waiting so long, but I got a feeling it's not going to be a disappointment.
From what I heard, it's going to be awesome.
Nice.
How could it not be with Mick Mars playing on it? One of the greatest and most underappreciated guitarists of all time.
Agree, but I wish the Karabi songs were still on it.
As far as I know, those songs will not be included in it.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
If I could have one wish beyond wish out of this whole discussion that we had today, is that there would be one more Motley Crue album, but it would be with John Karabi.
Oh.
Like if those guys said, you know what, we were so proud of that era, we were so proud of that band, so proud of that album, that we want to give you guys one more. So we got John Karabi back. We got together. We wrote the songs, the four of us. Because even Tommy Lee would be excited about that, I would think. You know, that would make him say, I actually want to come play drums. You know, I don't want to digitally program these rap tunes. You know, I want to actually go play drums to do a Motley Crue album that I could be excited about. Nikki Sixx would leave Montana for that, I would think, you know, and how fun it would be for them. And we talk about how we love our artists to be creative and be stimulated. You guys should do this. I know Nikki Sixx, I know you're listening to this. You need to do this. There's enough of us now that in retrospect revere the Motley Crue 94 album so much that if you were going to do anything with Motley Crue's name on it, that's what you should be doing right now.
But I know that Tommy Lee did an interview recently and he was raving about that, the 94 record. So he's still got a special place for it.
Well, and Nikki just changes his mind. So,
well, Nikki lost a lawsuit to Karabi and that's why he never gives it any praise.
Yeah, well, that interview he did for Sweden Rock Magazine, I just went bananas on that. And he just completely rewrote history and said what a horrible experience it was. And
he's full of shit.
No, absolutely. That's how in my article I said, were you full of shit then or are you full of shit now?
Yeah, deep down in his heart, he knows that's probably his favorite Motley Crue album, too.
That was a real band effort.
Right, so right good.
On. Well, so I guess we're not going to get into the country music tribute to Motley Crue.
Come on. What is worse than Time for Change but Darius Rucker doing Time for Change?
It fits Darius Rucker better than it does Motley Crue.
It also, honestly yeah. does, too.
Holy shit, you guys. We've been having so much fun talking about Motley Crue today that I forgot. I've got 11 questions lined up. If you, Wally Gator, think you got what it takes to beat the geek.
Ooh, yeah. I'm studying.
You've been studying.
I don't know.
All right, so Chris, you took a break. Wally reminded me, I've got piece of paper and pen, and I'm ready to rock and roll. You guys ready to play some Beat the Geek?
Yeah.
All right, it's been a while, but if I remember how this works, the way it goes is I'll ask the question. Chris is the geek. He's going to go first, so he'll get the first question. Before Chris answers the question, we're going to ask Wally if he wants to bet against Chris. If he decides to bet against Chris and Chris gets it wrong, Wally gets the point. If neither one of them get it right, no points. If Chris gets it right and he's bet against, he gets 2 points. Am I right? Do I remember correctly?
Yep, sounds right.
It's been a long time. Yep. So let's just get into it and see if we can remember how it goes. So we do remember that the very first question is going to go to Chris. He is the geek, and this is the question. In the early 90s, Pennsylvania glam rock band Heaven's Edge was playing a show at Philadelphia's legendary Empire Rock Club when tragedy struck. What happened? Wally, do you think Chris knows what happened to the band Heaven's Edge that night in Philadelphia, or do you want to bet against him?
I'm going to bet against him.
Hot and heavy right off the start here on Beat the Geek. Wally Gator's going to bet against Chris Sinzak. And now, Chris, you get the 4 choices to choose from. Did the singer overdose on stage? Was the bass player shot by a concert goer? Did a bus crash into the building? Or did the club manager stab the drummer?
Holy shit.
So was there an overdose on stage, the shooting of a bass player, a bus crashing into the building, or a club manager stabbing a drummer?
I've known some club managers in my time, and I know their temperament, so I'll say that one.
That is incorrect. That night, there was a rowdy patron. No, there was a rowdy patron in the bar that got thrown out by security. He went and got a shotgun because he was pissed because he was drunk and fighting, and he got thrown out. He came back to shoot the bouncer and accidentally shot Gigi Guidotti, the bass player of Heaven's Edge.
Wow, where did you dig that up?
I don't know. I just found it and was like, that sounds like a good trivia question.
That's too damn hard, man.
Come on, dude. The bass player got shot with a shotgun.
I'm sorry I'm not up on all the Heaven's Edge.
You never heard that story before? Well, Wally was smart. He bet against you. And since you get it wrong, Wally gets the point. So without even answering a single question, the Canadian is up 1 over the American. This is an international battle. All right, Wally, the next question is yours. Who was Ozzy Osbourne's bass player during the 2003 Ozfest tour? Chris, do you think Wally knows who Ozzy's bass player was in 2003?
I'm going to say he knows.
All right, Wally, you are not being bet against. And your choices are Twiggy Ramirez, Mike Inez, Jason Newsted, or Geezer Butler.
My instinct was Jason Newsted.
That is correct. And since Chris did not bet against you, that's 1 point for Wally. And that brings the score 2-0. Off to a hot start.
Oh, baby.
And the next question goes to Chris. Easy Action was the first Swedish hard rock band to sign a worldwide recording deal. After the demise of Easy Action, the lead singer would join this Swedish band. Got four pretty well-named bands. Chris has got to figure out who the lead singer of Easy Action would join after the demise of the first big Swedish rock band. Wally, do you think Chris knows the answer?
I'm going to say he does.
All right, Chris, you are not being bet against. Easy Action, they were the big Swedish rock band, and then they broke up. The lead singer, did he go on to join Europe, Clawfinger, Backyard Babies, or Shotgun Messiah?
You should have bet against me, Wally.
Damn.
I'm going to guess Shotgun Messiah.
The lead singer of Easy Action was Zinni J. Zan. That is correct.
Yeah.
He went on to join Shotgun Messiah. Wally does not bet against you, but you get the point for getting it correct. Nice one, Chris. That guy knows his Sweden rock.
No, I don't. It was a total guess.
That would have been my guess, too.
The guitar player from Easy Action goes on to join Europe.
Oh, was it John Norum?
No, the other one, Key...
Key Marcello?
That's the one.
Oh, okay. He's a great guitar player.
Yeah. All right, Wally, right back to you. You've got 2-1 lead right now, and your question is this. While auditioning to be the guitarist for Def Leppard, Steve Clark solidified his place by impressing his future bandmates with his rendition of this song. Chris, do you think Wally knows which song sealed the deal to get Steve Clark his job as a guitarist in Def Leppard?
Why not go for it? I'll say he doesn't know it.
All right, you are being bet against. The pressure is on. What song did Steve Clark play to get his job in Def Leppard? Was it Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd, Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin, Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf, or Savoy Truffle by the Beatles? Freebird, Stairway to Heaven, Bat Out of Hell, Savoy Truffle.
Gonna go with Freebird.
That is correct.
Damn.
And since Chris Sinzak bet against you, and you got it right, that's 2 points.
Yeah.
Ding, ding.
Getting slaughtered by a Canadian. What the hell?
4-1. We all know how things can change in the Kiss round, but that's still coming up. Right now, Chris, the question is yours, and we're going to do a battle of 1986. Which of the following four albums released in 1986 charted the highest on the U.S. Billboard album charts? Wally, I'm going to give Chris four albums. He's got to figure out which of the four charted the highest in the U.S., was the most popular in 1986. Do you think he knows it, or do you want to bet against him?
I'm going to play the chess strategy, so I've got a bit of a lead. I'm going to say he knows it.
All right, Chris, Wally's playing it safe with his nice 3-point lead, and he's not going to bet against you, and these are your choices. Which one charted the highest in 1986? Was it Mechanical Resonance by Tesla, Peace Sells But Who's Buying by Megadeth, Turbo by Judas Priest, or Rat Dancing Undercover?
Wow.
Wow, some interesting choices. I'd have to go with Rat.
That is incorrect.
Really?
Yep. As a matter of fact, out of the four of them, Megadeth charted in at 76, Tesla charted in at 32, Rat Dancing Undercover at 26.
It was Turbo.
And Turbo in the United States charted at number 17. You got
it
wrong.
I love that album.
But Wally did not bet against you, so no points awarded. The score remains 4-1. Judas Priest, Turbo. I would have probably never guessed that either.
Wow.
I'm glad.
That's surprising.
I love that record.
All right, Wally, we're going to do this fair, so you're going to get a battle, too. This is the Battle of 1979. Which of the following albums released in 1979 charted the highest on the Canadian album charts?
Good call.
So we got four albums released in 1979. To make it fair, we're going to talk about the Canadian album charts. Which of the four of these ranked the highest? Chris, do you think Wally knows his Canadian charts?
I'm down by three.
You see, yeah, you are.
The Kiss round's coming up.
Kiss round's coming up next.
I got to get back into it, so I'll bet against him.
All right. Chris playing it smart and tight. He's got to get some points back. So, Wally, you are being bet against. So, yes, which of these four albums ranked the highest on the Canadian album charts in 1979? Was it Cheap Trick's Dream Police, Triumph's Just a Game, Kiss's Dynasty, or AC/DC's Highway to Hell?
Wow. Okay, so I was nine. I'm trying to think back. Listening to radio, I wasn't really into the rock by that point, so...
Cheap Trick, Triumph, yep. Kiss, or AC/DC?
I'm going to go with Kiss.
That is incorrect.
Yes. Damn.
Actually, out of the four of these, in Canada... AC/DC Highway to Hell was 40. Triumph Just a Game was 33. Kiss's Dynasty in Canada made it up to 6. But Dream Police by Cheap Trick, number 4.
Wow. I would have guessed Kiss, too.
So Chris did bet against you, and you got it wrong. Man, he needs it. A point for Chris. And that brings us up to the Kiss round. Double the points. Oh, yeah. And the first question in the Kiss round goes to Chris. In a 2007 poll that was taken at democraticunderground.com to determine which member of the original lineup was the most popular with fans today, who out of the original four members won with 79% of the vote? We already know the choices. Wally, what do you think? It's the Kiss round, double the points. You want to bet against him?
Not a chance.
All right, Chris, you're not being bet against. In 2007, democraticunderground.com put up a poll and asked, who's your favorite member of the original four members of Kiss? And one of the guys won with 79% of the vote. You know the names. Who's the man?
Gene?
That is incorrect.
Really?
In 2007, on a poll that said who is most popular today, with 79% of the vote, most popular, the spaceman, Ace Frehley.
Why didn't why didn't I do that, considering who's asking the question?
I just thought it was interesting. I just thought I'd bring it up, you know?
I would have said Gene for sure.
Damn.
Yeah, maybe in 77, but not in 2007. Chris, you were not bet against. You got it wrong. Could have been double the points, but instead, it's nothing. The score remains 2-4.
All right!
Oh, yeah. So, the question in the Kiss round now goes back to Wally Gator, and this one's for you. Famous Canadian songwriter Jim Vallance penned the song Rock and Roll Hell that would appear on the Creatures of the Night album. The song was previously released in 1979 on an album by this Canadian rock band. Chris, he is Canadian, and he is a Kiss fan. Do you think he knows the answer to the question?
I'm going to be angry at him if he doesn't know this. I'm not betting against him.
All right, in the Kiss round, he could cash in big, but he's going to let it slide. Wally, your choices are Triumph, BTO, Loverboy, or Prism?
Well, I'm going with BTO.
That is correct, because in the original version of it that was released, it was on the BTO album, Rock and Roll Nights.
The library of CGCM radio, that track.
Nice. See, I've never heard that before. I looked at this today. So you were not bet against, but it is double the points. So that's two of them. So Wally now in the lead. 6-2 with only two questions left.
Yeah, so I'm done.
No.
Chris is pretty well done. It would take some kind of crazy mathematical miracle, but we'll see. All right, Chris, this question goes to you. It is your last question. In the early years of the band, Poison played a show in Arizona where club owners took issue with Bret Michaels pissing in a cup on the side of the stage, which erupts into a brawl between the band and the bouncers. What was the final result? Well, you know, Chris is a big Poison fan. Do you think he knows what was the result of this brawl in Arizona?
Well, I'm going to be a gentleman and bet against him.
All right, Chris, he's being a gentleman. He's doing the Canadian way. He's giving you a chance. Your choices are CeCe was badly beaten by security. Bret was arrested for indecent exposure. The band and crew beat up the bouncers. Bobby Dahl was arrested for punching a cop. What went down that night?
CeCe was arrested.
That is incorrect. Actually, the band and the crew beat the shit out of the bouncers that night.
That's a hard question, man.
And when the cops showed up, they said these little skinny guys wearing makeup with their long hair beat the shit out of you guys. You guys get on out of here and let them go. Wow. As a matter of fact, they said Robbie Crane, you know, he would go on to play bass with Vince Neil and Rat and a bunch of other bands.
Yep.
He was like 17 years old at the time, this little skinny kid, and beat the shit out of some 6'5 bouncer and left him in a bloody mess.
Wow. That's kind of the equivalent of what's happening to me in this game.
Yeah, you're being beaten and left in a bloody mess because Wally was trying to be gentlemanly and bet against you and give you a chance. And what did you do? You gave him the point. That brings the score up 7-2. One question left, and this one goes to Wally. Wally, how did Jakey Lee find out he was fired from Ozzy's band? Chris, do you think Wally knows? I mean, you might as well bet against him, right? What do you got to lose? You don't even have nothing to win.
I'll bet against.
All right, Wally. In desperation, hopeless desperation, you're being bet against. How did Jakey Lee find out he was fired from Ozzy's band? Did he hear it from a roadie? Get a FedEx from Sharon, heard it in a heart-to-heart with Ozzy, or read it in a magazine?
I want to say he read it in a FedEx from Sharon.
That is incorrect. He actually heard it from a roadie, poor guy.
Oh, roadie, okay. Interesting.
Well, Chris gets the point, but man, what a blowout today. We're going to change the name just for today to Beat the Gator, which cannot be done. Congratulations, Wally. Man, what a score. 7-3.
Did not expect that.
Chris, you're rusty, man.
You have to come back for a rematch.
Yeah, you're out of practice.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But yeah, if you beat Chris, you're eligible for a rematch, I think, down the line for sure. Wally, it's Thanksgiving time, a little late for you, a little early for us, but I'm very thankful that you were able to come on the show today with us and talk about some Motley Crue.
It's been a blast. It was absolutely way overdue and too much fun.
Thanks so much, man. It was great to catch up with you and fun to talk to you guys about these albums.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely.
You guys stay tuned next week. We got a really, really important episode coming your way with some special guests. And it could be a really historical episode for the Decibel Geek Podcast. So you're not going to want to miss that. Thanks to Wally Gator. Of course, you guys check him out on the CGCM Podcast and Radio Network. Those guys have gone on from doing our little show on Thanksgiving to doing so much. We're proud of you guys. You know that?
The radio's fun, man. The radio's been a big learning experience for sure.
But they're out there for you to enjoy, so check them out. If you love Canada, and who don't, enjoy Canada's favorite sons, Wally and Rich, on the CGCM Podcast. And like I said, next week's going to be a real important one, so you guys make sure to join us. Share, retweet us, check us out with Rock and Ron Runyon on Decibel Geek TV, and we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.